Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate podcast with Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate. Why do we do it? We do it for the purposes of creating passive income and legacy wealth for you and your family. If you're interested in finding your freedom number, come over to our website at morrisinvest.com/freedom and download your free financial freedom cheat sheet today. The 6 rules for using a 1031 exchange for real estate investing. That's today's show. Let's dive in. Hey, everyone. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And together we form Morris Invest. We've been flipping houses for a number of years now. We buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating passive income and legacy wealth for you and your family. So if you're new to the show, go back into the archives. We have tons of great episodes where we talk about everything from tax benefits to setting up your profit first system for your different bank accounts for real estate investing, liability protection, all of those things. But on today's episode, we're going to dive deep into the most powerful tool in the real estate arsenal, the 1031 exchange. You know, we've had Tom Wheelwright on the show before a number of times, our tax accountant at ProVision, and he said this is one of the most powerful tools that any real estate investor, it's probably in the tax code, would you say, maybe like the most powerful tool for continuing to build wealth throughout your life?
Oh, definitely. The 1031 exchange is like, I think he calls it like some kind of little magical wealth building tool. It's like a magic wand.
Right, exactly. So we've been deep diving some of this. You know, in the office at Morris Invest, we get a lot of investors who will call us up and say, hey, maybe they already own like 2 properties with us, et cetera, but they'll say, hey, you know, we're about to sell this house in Phoenix and we wanted to use that money in order to buy 5, 6, 7, 10 rental properties. And can you help us do that? So there are some rules and absolutely we always are able to accommodate that. And so we kind of walk through some different stages with some investors and explain certain things that they need to have in place ahead of time. But today, we're not going to go over that piece of it. I think we're going to deep dive some of the nitty gritty rules that we can really take advantage of for the 1031, right?
Know what the law says, that you can exchange one property for another property and not pay taxes on the gains. But I never really was sure of the details of how it worked. And I think I've mentioned several times that I've been reading Loopholes of Real Estate by Garrett Sutton. And he has a great chapter on the 1031 exchange with the details of exactly how it works. And I thought, oh, okay. Because a lot of times people will ask us, oh, you know, I want to sell this property for $300,000 and buy 5 for, you know, $50,000. Can I do that? And I've never been quite sure how that works. So I read this chapter, which everyone should read this book. And I thought, okay, now I get it. I completely get the specific rules of it. So I wanted to share that with our audience, but you really should be reading this book. I want to reiterate that we're not tax accountants. We're not financial advisors. We're just people who like to share the things that we learn because we get excited about learning. And so we want you to learn along with us and then continue your learning process. So a lot of times in our house, the way this works is Clayton will hear other people like us who like to share things in their podcast. And he'll say, Natalie, go learn this. And then I'll find the book and we take responsibility for what we learn and what we execute on. You just need someone to share things with you in order to be able to do that. So that's our goal today, is to share something with you so that you learn whether or not this works for you. We can't say, but it is, again, an awesome, awesome investor tool.
Right. And if you're new to the show, you should go back and check out episode 197, Garrett Sutton. If you're listening to the podcast, go to iTunes, download it. We did an episode called The Legal Loopholes of Real Estate Investing. He is Robert Kiyosaki's attorney as one of the Rich Dad advisors. So throughout the whole month of August, we did the Legends series. We did Robert Kiyosaki, Tom Wheelwright, Ken McElroy, Garrett Sutton. So go listen to those episodes. But Garrett's book, The Legal Loopholes of Real Estate Investing, there's a lot of great nuggets and chunks in there. Nugget chunks? Nugget chunks. that we're going to dive into today. All right. So what's one of the first
good
if
word?
Gonna, if we're going to go through,
you know, today our daughter said poop for the first time, speaking of nugget chunks. I was changing her diaper. She went pop.
Oh, good.
Pop. Isn't that so cute?
Got to make sure we get her on the vocabulary. That's the most important word.
All right. So, you know, a lot of times we do episodes like this and I go through the wonky parts and Clayton glazes his eyes over. And then I say something that I know he's like, oh, that's why I care about this. If for instance, our episode on passive loss, you were kind of like, oh, why do I care? And then all of a sudden, like I made a point halfway through and you're like, that's why I care. So I want to lead this with why you should care about the 1031 exchange. So the 1031 exchange, let me tell you briefly what it is. Again, it's the tax code that allows you to exchange one rental property for another and not pay taxes on the gains. Okay. Why do you care? This is a podcast where we talk about buying and holding, right? So in theory, you want to buy these properties and hold them forever and continue to gain earn rental income, right? But there's one example in his book that really makes it clear to me why you should care. Now, obviously, maybe you want to continue to own bigger things. Maybe your goal is to have a few single family properties and then you want to own commercial real estate. Maybe you like the idea of that, right? That's great. So that this is one way that you can sort of build up your portfolio into higher valued assets. Maybe that's your goal. Fine. But he also gives this example of a couple that had owned real estate and then they want to slowly pass it on to their kids as they reach retirement age and they've built up their money that they want to live on and they want to pass this down to their children. So what they do, let's say they have an asset worth $500,000, right? They've owned it for a while. Now they're ready to sell it. So what they do is they sell it and they take a 1031 exchange and they buy something worth $1 million, an apartment complex or a strip mall or whatever, right? And so they buy something with that $500,000 worth $1 million. They have 50% ownership of it and their kids now own 50% of that. So their money can completely finance the deal, but now they only own 50%. Of their new asset, right? So they hold that for a year or so, over a year, and then they decide, okay, I'm going to buy something worth $2 million, right? They sell it, they make a small gain. Now they own something worth $2 million. They use the profit to finance the next thing. Now they own 40%, but the kids own 60. They do this a couple of times. What they've done is passed on something to their kids worth, say, in the end, $5 million that was not taxed along the way. They phased themselves out. Now their children have this amazing cash flowing asset that was gained tax-free.
Right.
So isn't that amazing? So this is what, okay, so yeah, we're thinking about doing this years down the road, right? This, you may not care so much about it now, but I think that's one way because I do intend to continue to keep the things that we own now, but maybe years down the road, we're like, we don't want to own this anymore. We want to pass this down into someone else's ownership. That's a great tool. But all the time we have investors who call us and say, you know, I just inherited a property. It's worth $400,000. Can I 1031 exchange that? Yes. So the first rule is that your 1031 exchange has to be on an investment property. You cannot 1031 exchange your own property. Of course, or you cannot 1031 exchange something that you live in, right?
Right.
There are some, I guess, workarounds in that. For instance, I had an apartment in San Francisco that I did live in, but then I rented it out for a couple of years after that. So as long as it had become an investment property, then I could 1031 exchange that, which after I read this chapter, I was really kicking myself that we didn't.
Well, I know. I mean, here, you know, the thing is what you want to make sure that, you know, you go back and you listen to our early episodes where we explain what a 1031 exchange is, the mechanics of how to do it. We've had some great interviews with people who can set up your 1031 for you. They walk you, you can call them. We have their phone number right in the episode. You can call them, work with them. They'll do it for you. But you have to identify those properties 45 days after closing. You have 45 days to identify the properties.
Right. You're getting ahead of me in the rules, but yes.
Okay. But my point is that Yeah, we and then if you don't do it and then you close on the property, you're screwed. You literally, you're out all that tax money, and then you're going to have to pay capital gains on it.
You lose the opportunity too.
Yeah, and so we lost that opportunity because we didn't know what we didn't know that many years ago. And so yes, you made a nice profit on the sale of that A-class property. You were happy to wash your hands of that thing and get rid of it, but then we didn't roll it into a 1031 exchange. We could have rolled that into 3, 4, 5 rental properties, and we didn't, and we ended up paying taxes on it. I mean, these are the things you learn. That's why we do this podcast, so you don't make the same mistakes that we do.
Right. So we're dopes. But you don't have to buy the same kind of investment property in a 1031 exchange. So if you own, let's say, a pink walk-up in Brooklyn, right? Mm-hmm. And you rent that out to hipsters, you do not then have to go and buy another pink walk-up in Brooklyn. You can use that to buy another investment of any kind. So you can then go and buy a strip mall or a single family. I guess you could own a strip club. In theory, there's no rule against that. I guess it depends state by state on whether or not that's legal.
Quick question, but, though, on the having lived in it versus and then you turned it into a rental property, do you know off the top of your head, is there a law, like how much time you have now had to convert it to a rental property before you can, like, for instance, I had an investor recently, they have a primary residence or a condo that they're going to then convert to a rental property in order to do a 1031 exchange. Do they have to rent it out for a year? Is it 6 months? Do we know the answer to that? Maybe we should do some follow-up.
Well, you have to have kept your investment for a year and a day.
A year and a day. Okay.
So if they have converted it into investment, I'm going to assume that the same laws apply. And that has to do with making sure that you're in within like a separate tax year so that you're keeping it, you know, so that you're not getting quick gains on it. So if you have rented it out and you haven't lived there, it has to have been, I want to say, at least a year and a day before you can call that an investment property, right?
Okay. So yeah. That was rule number one. All right, what's rule number two?
Okay. And so these are still within rule number one. You can't do this for flips. Okay, this is for buy and holds. If you're going to flip it within, that's why you need to have it for a year and a day, because the IRS wants this to be investment property that you are continuing to hold and then you'll have gains on, right?
Right.
So these are things that you actually have rented out, not something that you flip. All right. You can do this on vacation homes, but that's a whole other ball of wax. So we'll kind of, we can talk about that some other day. Now, rule number two is that you have 45 days within the close period to identify your properties. That doesn't mean you have to close on them. That means you have to sort of put up your red flag, stake your claim, and say, this will be mine.
Right. Now, so when you started working with a 1031 exchange company, they're getting the paperwork together. You've started this process. Then you identify those 45 days after closing. You have that window to do that. But it's very important that you, of course, go and work with a 1031 exchange company to get everything set up first before you close. Again, otherwise you'll be kicking yourself. You cannot then retroactively start going and looking for properties that you want to roll it into. That's illegal.
Yeah. Now, usually your escrow person will be familiar with this process and they'll know how to slap the paperwork on your sale. But we're going to talk about experts for the 1031 exchange later in another rule. But you typically want 3 properties or less on your list. Now, the reason for that is that there are no limits on your list if it has 3 properties or less. So say you made $150,000 and you've identified 3 $50,000 properties, you're set, right? But if you want to buy more than 3 properties with your gains, you become subject to the 200% rule of Section 1031, which allows the 1031 exchange. That says that since your list is more than 3, the total combined purchase price of everything on the list cannot be more than twice the selling price of your old property. Now, if you're buying these single family turnkey properties that we talk about all the time, you probably won't have that issue, right? But if you're then taking your 1031 exchange and leveraging it into a mortgage and you buy something that's more than 200%, twice the selling price of your old property, then you're going to trigger some taxable gains. So that becomes an issue. So that's something to think about. You can identify three or less, but if you're going to identify more than that, you just have to make sure it doesn't exceed twice the value.
Right. Okay. Right.
Makes sense?
Exactly. Yeah. Just so real numbers here. If you have, for instance, someone is selling a house, they've made a profit of, they're selling it for $400,000, and they, you can't exceed, you can't buy something for more than, what's the math on that? You can't.
So what did you say? 400,000?
400,000. If they're selling,
then you can't buy something worth more than $800,000.
Right. So they would have to buy, they could roll that into, if they're selling a single family home in Los Angeles, they're selling it for 400,000. The ROI was really low and they wanted to convert it into higher ROI properties. They might buy, let me just do some math on that. So like if they bought like a, one of our, like our new construction or something like that, let's say 400,000 divided by 68, mm-hmm. that's about five, that's 5.8 properties. So they could then go up to six, seven, they can go up, but they can't go beyond 10 of these properties basically,
yeah.
because that would exceed that 200% mark.
Right. So sometimes people take the gains on their 1031 exchange and then just use the cash and buy something with cash outright, right? But then sometimes people take it and use it to for the down payment of a mortgage into something bigger. And so both things are allowed. So you're thinking about, again, how you, the purchase price of what you're getting in the end, okay? Right. Now, rule number three is that you have 180 days from the day you close on the sale to complete the purchase of the new thing, okay? Now, the IRS is not friendly with that 180 calendar days. So if 180 days falls on, say, the 4th of July or Christmas, they do not give a butt crack. You have, it still counts, okay?
Right.
So you, if you, if your 100 days falls on Christmas and you know your title company is not going to close an escrow for you on Christmas, you better get it done early because the IRS will then take that opportunity to tax you. The only exception is if that 180th day falls on the due date of your tax return and you have not purchased your replacement property, then you need to extend your tax return. So they're only really friendly with their own
taxes, yeah.
Right, their own rules. But holiday, Sunday, your birthday, they don't get a, give a rat's behind.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful with that because they will take the opportunity to trigger a taxable event. Now, whether or not like your auditor has, you know, a little bit of leeway with that, I don't know, but I would not chance it.
Yeah. All right. So 45 days to identify the properties, and then you have 180 days or equal to 6 months to close that all of those investment properties that you're rolling.
Right. I mean, they don't even use the term 6 months because, you know, if there's a leap year in there that gives you more of monthage, if that's even
right.
a word. I just made it up. So you have to be really strict with yourself on the 180 days. Okay, rule number four, you want to find a qualified intermediary. The problem with this is that pretty much anyone can be an intermediary. So you can't say, oh, I take this, you know, $100,000 gain and I put it in my own checking account and then I'm going to take that, right? You can't touch the money in between the sale of your old property and the purchase of your new property. By law, this money has to be held by an independent third party called a qualified intermediary. So they are the ones who prepare the exchange documents, hold the money in an escrow account, and then put it down for the purchase of the new property. Now, this becomes problematic because I can ask our neighbor Carson to hold that money. Carson is 11, and that would be fine, right? But then let's say, I don't know, Carson's not a good one because he's not going to get into trouble.
And also he's in what, seventh grade?
Yes, Carson's in the sixth grade. But okay, in theory, I could ask Carson, and Carson's very trustworthy.
Right.
And so that might not be a terrible idea. But let's say we ask Eddie Haskell, who lives down the street.
Or Bernie Madoff. Let's say you ask Bernie Madoff.
That's a great one. Okay. I was trying to think of someone offensive who wouldn't actually offend any of our listeners.
No one's really supporting Bernie Madoff.
Right. Okay. It's harder than you think on the fly. Okay, let's say you ask Bernie Madoff to hold your money, right?
Right.
And then Bernie Madoff puts that into his own account, right? And then Bernie Madoff now gets into all of this trouble and the government comes after him. They can actually take the money that he was holding on your behalf if it was in an account in his name, even though you can say, wait, that wasn't even his money. We had an agreement. He signed the paperwork. So the court has stated that a number of times that money held in a separate account for the intermediary was protected from the intermediary's creditors. Okay. So you have to make very sure. That doesn't make any sense. You have to be very careful, is what I was trying to say, that your intermediary puts that money in an escrow account, not in their own personal account. Because if something happens, which has happened before, obviously, if the courts have ruled on this, then this has clearly happened, where you give it to your intermediary and the intermediary defaults on their own finances, and then the creditors come a-calling, they can take your money, and then you're SOL.
Right. So I would recommend you go back to episode 53 of our Investing in Real Estate podcast. If you're listening to the audio version, check that out, please, and download it. Lance Groth was our guest. Many of our investors we've pointed to, we've sent over to work with Lance. He's great. He handles 1031 exchanges. He does all of that. So we've had a lot of our investors that we've worked with, or you know, he's helped a lot of people that have nothing to do with our company at all. But he will handle all of that for you. So if you have a 1031 exchange, check out Lance's company, and he will be
the intermediary. What do you think the fees are on something like that? I have no idea.
I have no idea either. I mean, probably a few hundred dollars. Yeah, yeah, probably a few $100. Just like, you know, I would think it's almost like the closing costs, typical closing costs for like, you know, properties that we do, or right. What, like $500-$800 for a closing.
But it will be on the HUD, right?
Right. So. Yeah, it'll be on the HUD.
And,
all right.
You know, for things like that, like if there's extra fees and like those types of things tend to be taxable deductions, even if you have to come out of pocket. I don't think like if you only had $100 to 1031 exchange and then, you know, you needed to come out of pocket for it, that would be, you could just pay for that. It wouldn't trigger anything taxable against your 1031 exchange. Okay. Rule number 5, how you held title on the old property is how you have to take title on your new property. So we've talked many times about how we have different LLCs set up in different states for our holdings, right? So if I sell something in Florida in house right foot, I cannot then buy something in Indiana in house left foot, right? House right foot has to be the new owner of whatever house right foot sold.
Interesting.
Makes sense?
Okay. Right. So this is not something scary, right? You just purchase it in the same LLC, the same business entity, or your own name.
Right. A lot of times these investors have been left something in their name from their parents or their grandparents. Well, then you can't say, great, I take this thing that was in my own inheritance in my name and buy it in an LLC. Doesn't work that way.
Right.
Okay. Now, unfortunately, then that leaves you up. We've talked many times about how you don't want to hold things in your own name. So you can later, like either when that's, you could either quit claim that into your own name. That's one option. You'd have to talk to your attorney about whether or not that triggers some local taxes, or you don't know, right? So you want to talk to someone about it, but the rules are how it's purchased has to be purchased in the same entity.
So purchasing, and then of course you can transfer it later. So close and then do a deed transfer, just call up your title company or an attorney, and for a few $100, you can transfer it over to the business entity of your choosing. So
right. So you want to talk to an expert about that. Exactly. Okay. Okay. Rule number 6 is that you must buy equal or up. Okay. So if you've purchased something and you've sold it for $400,000, you have to then buy something else worth $400,000 or more. You can't take that and then use a 1031 exchange for something worth $100,000. Now, we have talked about that you can buy several things worth $100,000, but you can't just buy one thing for less and then keep the rest of it. Doesn't work like that. And also you have to reinvest all the cash that you gain from the sale. So let's say you sold something for $400,000, but you had a mortgage on it and you had bought it for $300,000, right? Your gain is $100,000. You can't say, oh, okay, I'm going to 1031 exchange for something else that's $500,000 and I'm going to keep some of this cash in my pocket. You cannot. You have to use all of the cash into the new thing. Makes sense.
Also, the gain is what you'll be taxed on if you hand this down to your children. So
that's the whole point, right?
Right. So the gain is $100,000.
Yeah, on the gain.
Right. So you hand this down to your children. You're only then, and then if they choose to sell it after your death and they have it, they just decide to sell out your portfolio of properties. They'll be taxed just on the gain, not the, you know, the massive amount of wealth that you've built up with the actual properties. So the gain is what you'll be taxed on. So important that you be, you know, you have to use the full amount of that when you're going up and up and up in your real estate investing. Awesome.
Right. Okay. And one other point is that there's no requirement that the debt on the new purchase be equal or greater to the amount of debt on the old purchase. The debt, the IRS doesn't care about.
Right.
Really. What they care about is that you have exchanged your gains, because if you sold something that you bought for $300,000 and you sold it for $400,000, what they would get their hooks in is that $100,000 gain, right? And so you're sort of kicking the can down the road so that they can't, all the while increasing your net worth, increasing your portfolio, and increasing your monthly cash flow, which is all we really care about here on The Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. What podcast are we on?
This is the Investing in Real Estate show.
Okay. All right.
I've had a podcast that I do with my nerd friend. We talk superheroes. I've done it for 10 years. It's called The Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
And they care about cash flow there too, but less so.
Yeah. No, we just talk about, you know, the new Star Trek show and stuff like that. Can you believe we've been doing that show for 10 years? Holy smokes.
No.
Yeah. 10 years this year. So anyway, yeah, that's, that is, and I mean, such a powerful tool, the 1031 exchange. I mean, you think about it, you can just keep up, you know, if you find a great property, you're holding it for a number of years, the idea is you never want to sell it, but unless you can upgrade, right? If you can take that low ROI property that you have in Phoenix, that's only making you 3% ROI, but you know, you've had it for a number of years, you moved out, you moved to New York, now you're renting it for 4 years. Now you're going to sell it. Great. You might make $400,000 on it, but the ROI is really low because your cash flow is terrible. That's an opportunity to convert that cash into, you know, 8 rental properties that are going to have a high ROI, 10 to 12% net return. Like, that's the power of the 1031 exchange. That's why this is such a really incredible tool.
Yeah. So hopefully you learned something about this. And now when we get all these questions, like, can I buy more than one? Or, you know, we have a better handle on it, because before I kind of only was vaguely familiar with what it did. But now I see that I see exactly how powerful it was. So I can't recommend this book high enough. It's The Loopholes of Real Estate by Garrett Sutton. And we'll have links to that in the show notes.
Indeed, we will. And we'll be back on Thursday with another episode of the Investing in Real Estate show. I'm really excited because if you're listening to the audio version, we've got Brent Daniels, who's going to be joining us on the show. He's going to show us how to find discounted properties. It's a fantastic method if you know, don't have a large arsenal of cash right now and you want to go out there and try to build up a quick sort of arsenal of cash, maybe $50,000, $100,000 is one way to do it. And Brent is going to show us how to do it. That's how I got my start in real estate investing. So Brent is going to walk us through how to do all of that and more. So until next time, everyone, go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. We'll see you next time here on the show. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.